Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 101 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast that rolls off the tongue a little bit slower than the two-digit numbers, but I'm so excited to be in the 100s and join tonight Jason Andrews, Jason Neons, Jason. I'm totally screwing up the intro tonight. I think what it is like I'm trying to bring some energy that's not there, but that's okay. We'll get through it. It'll happen. It'll happen what happens, and I'm Grimlock, Philip Keeney. Total butcher of the intro.
So what you're saying is you were amazing through episode 100. Mm-hmm. But through the 100s, this is what we are going
to
get from you.
It's like we're back to me in episode one, where I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's... I can see it. I mean, it's always been episode one from you for me, you know?
For you or for me? A dig at me or yourself?
Well, it's a dig at you. For me, you're always an episode one-er. You know? Oh. That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Jason, how are you doing this week, though?
Good, man. I'm, good stuff at work. Good, gonna have a... I'll say this. It's been crazy hot here in Atlanta, and my week has been like work hard all day and then come home. I get home about 7 o'clock, and my kids are like having swim lessons. And are like, we bring somebody to our house here and like they do swim lessons in the backyard. Okay. They start at 4:30 and I come home at 7 and they're still in the pool, you know, and the swim lessons are an hour. Right.
Okay.
And so I come home, change, jump in the pool with them. You know, it's crazy hot. And we swim until like 7:30 and they are in the pool for like 3 hours.
Yeah. I bet that's a lot of fun for them, man.
No, well, that's just like every, you know, all the moment they get off school or anything, they're just like, can we get in the pool? So they're having a blast. So that's been my week every week, every day. It's just like, come home, get in the pool, you know? The like temperature in the pool is at like 89 degrees right now. Oof. Because it's just like, I mean, it's just hot, man. And so it's just warmed that pool up. But it actually feels really good in comparison to outside. So just go chill and.
You know, I'd never really thought about this before, but I was listening to another podcast recently, which shout out to Knockback. If you've never heard of that podcast, go check it out. It's two guys.
You trying to like send our listeners away? Like people only have time for one podcast and you're trying to give them off to somebody else. What the hell?
I can't not at least give shout outs to other people doing cool stuff. Okay. It's a total different vibe. They talk about old stuff from like the 90s. Okay. So if you're like me, you can dig the nostalgia, okay? So they were doing a pool show all about pools growing up and how they're different from back then and all the stupid shit that we did as kids back then.
Oh, yeah.
But they were talking about how, like, because one of them lives in Virginia now, which is not even as far south as you are. Right. And he was, like, saying that, you know, pools in Virginia are not as popular as in New York. And he's like, because it's just too hot. And I'm like... this doesn't make sense. But then I started thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, the pool down here, like when it's 100, 105 degrees outside, the temperature of the water is still really, really warm. Yep. It makes sense. I never really kind of...
Well, and the shallower your pool is, the more it, you know, heats up, right? So like if you have a pool that's not very shallow, I mean, luckily we have a pretty good big deep end, which helps preserve some of that, you know, coolness. Mm-hmm. Our pool doesn't, you know, like from last summer, I can tell. I mean, it never gets to that point where it's so hot that it's not worth getting into. You just are wet. You're the same temperature, right? Like it stays below what the temperature outside is.
That's at least one positive thing there.
Yeah, I think that this is going to probably be, you know, about 90 is where my pool will probably cap.
That's still hot.
It's still hot, you know. But it's a whole lot better than 105 with 100% humidity outside, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot better.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty. I had to drive to Waco for work yesterday, and driving back home that 2 hours and 15 minutes. Like, I got home and I immediately got in the shower. I was like, I feel like I'm just swimming in my clothes. It's just nasty. It's so gross, man.
Try it over here, bro. It's so much more humid here.
I mean, you guys have more humidity, but typically I think the temperatures stay a little bit higher out here than they do down there.
It's like almost identical.
Right now it is.
Oh, I mean, just like regularly. Like, you look up the like almost at any time, like up the temperature in Dallas and look up the temperature in Atlanta, they're almost identical. Mm. There's not much change at all. It's just way more humid here. Here's like Houston, basically.
You're not selling me on Georgia at all.
I'm not trying to. I'm just telling you facts.
Well, very good. All right. Well, you know, I know that we just had the finale of Kenobi, but I have to admit to the listeners that I have not been able to watch it. So I can't really.
Not a true Star Wars fan.
I guess not. I guess that's what I am.
You wouldn't sleep. Okay.
I would have found time.
You would have just chosen not to sleep.
Yeah.
That's what you would have done.
No, I'm going to watch it tonight though, for sure. For sure. I'm getting it tonight. So I'll have to speak next week on my thoughts of Kenobi. I've also heard some positive rumblings on Ms. Marvel. So maybe that's worth checking out.
I missed this week's episode, so I'll catch up on that this weekend. But other than that, I'm pretty caught up on it.
Like, do you recommend that I check it out, or should I miss my first ever
Marvel
show?
Look, it's been fine. It's different than a lot of the others. It's very much kind of like a Saved by the Bell, kind of like a coming of age. Feels more like a teen movie, or, you know, a teen show. Like, it's not a movie, because it's more of, I mean, it's a sitcom. I mean, it just kind of has that coming of age, young, you know, mid-teen kind of vibe to it, right? Like, it's fine. Okay. That's kind of what it feels like. It's like a Marvel, you know, teen show.
Marvel teen show. I mean, I don't think you're really selling it for me here again.
It's not amazing, but it's not bad. You know, so far I've just been kind of like, it's all right.
Okay. I'm still going to have to check it out. You know, I haven't missed any of the Marvel shows yet. I don't think I'll start here. But unfortunately, because I just haven't checked any of those things out, I don't have a whole lot to say on those topics. But if you'd like to fill the listeners in at all,
So let me tell you everything that happens in Kenobi real quick.
Okay, yeah, so, I'm gonna not listen to this.
I mean, you just told me that I was allowed to tell the listeners, and then now you're, you know what, make up your mind. This is the stuff I'm talking about with you being episode one, okay? You gotta get your stuff together. All right, spoiler alert. Spider-Man kicks the shit out of Vader in this episode of Kenobi.
That is some next level Marvel Star Wars cinematic universe shit right there. But I mean, I believe it. I mean, Spider-Man goes to space, so why not?
Yeah,
I mean,
they and time he references travel Star Wars in the show. He's like, remember that old movie? A really old movie?
Listen, they time travel, they go to space.
Ah, yeah.
Star Wars is in a galaxy long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
far, far away.
I mean, why not? Actually, can we just sit on that for 1 second? Like, why did George Lucas feel the need for his opening crawl to say that it was set in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago? Like, why did it have to be, like, in the past? I mean, it's like instead a sci-fi movie. What, like...
Because it's different? I don't know.
I don't even... Someone write in and tell me what the lore... reason
so
behind that
look, okay here I've got a small little talking point for you. Okay, so okay. We can start the show before we get into it. Here's our little talk point here. Okay, I'm interested to know where you stand on this, because I had a conversation with a fellow employee about this week. So we were going back and forth because this particular person hates the prequels and loves the sequels, right? Like, loves, you know, episodes 7, 8, and 9. but hates episode 1, 2, and 3. No, it's a her.
Do not let that person babysit your children.
Bro, I'm telling you, we go at it with each other and I'm like, what is wrong with you? And they're talking about how much of a genius George Lucas is and blah, 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 and all these things that
George Lucas, but hates the prequels.
Yes. So here's the thing. I'm like, okay, first off, you know that George Lucas was not involved in the sequels, but he was the prequels. And also, so here's the talking point that we go into, and this is where I'm curious what your stance is.
Okay.
So I went into talking about how, for as much like, because she talks about the depths of story that Star Wars has, right? And I'm like, okay, but to be fair, most of the depth of story has not come from George Lucas. It's come from other people. George Lucas, for all the like acclaim of being this amazing storyteller, I don't think is that great of a storyteller. I think he stole all the shit from Dune and was a really good movie maker and set the bar and the standard for like basically even today, basically he owns all of the tech or properties that do like all the like top-notch sound work, all the top-notch visual effects, all the top-notch, like that's the kind of stuff that he was badass at and set a gold standard with. But when it comes to the story of Star Wars, it's just fucking Dune. Like he legitimately stole it. And I don't think he's that great of a storyteller. Like there's so many loopholes and so much shit that he was involved in that I'm like, I love the Star Wars story. I'm not trying to like, you know, bash it, but I'm just saying there's a lot of really good Star Wars story that is because of other people. Say for instance, Dave Filoni, John Favreau, I cannot think of his name all of a sudden, the Zahn books, Timothy Zahn, you know, a ton of comics that have added all this lore, like all this stuff. And that's not George Lucas. Like all the like really good storytelling is not George Lucas.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I agree with some of what you're saying, but I don't know that I would go all the way as saying that it's not all, because like if you were to ask me what is the best storytelling in Star Wars, like out of everything, and I'm a huge fan of Thrawn books, I'd say the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars is where some of the best storytelling happens in Star Wars.
Okay, so this is after the fact,
and that's glad you George brought that up. Lucas. That's George Lucas.
Okay,
and a lot of Dave Filoni.
Yep.
So and Dave I think Filoni. When the two of those got together. Was when I think Star Wars could really explode. And listen, like when you talk about the prequels and you talk about what George Lucas can bring from a story perspective, there's so much depth there that I didn't see when I was younger that I've seen as I've come back to them. I think that's where when I think about what disappoints me about the prequels is I'm disappointed with the what I see it could have been, you know, the missed opportunity in the prequels. Some of the story threads through those first three movies are genuinely very fascinating.
Bro, episode 3, so much happens in episode 3, and it is like an action movie lover's wet dream. Like there are, you have the Yoda and Palpatine Dooku? Fight.
I thought he fought Dooku. No. Oh, does he fight Palpatine as well in the third one? Okay, yeah. You're right.
You have the Yoda Palpatine fight where he goes off and hides, right? You have the, essentially Palpatine beats him. Like he realizes he's not going to beat him and he runs off.
Yeah.
Right. Then you have the Mace Windu Palpatine fight. Mm-hmm. Then you have the, Obi-Wan versus General Grievous fight. Then you have the Obi-Wan versus Anakin fight. Like you've got some legitimate saber fights in that movie that are by far the best lightsaber fights in all of Star Wars. Like even the newest ones. Like the fight scene of Obi-Wan and Anakin is so top-notch, top-tier, like unbelievable. Like the like coordination of like their actual fights and how they're like twisting their swords and doing stuff is I think the like absolute peak of all of the saber you know battles, like even more so than like the, I mean even the quote-unquote badass scene in, I can't even remember which episode it was, but the one with Ray.
Episode eight has Ray a really awesome scene.
Yes. And they're in the red room and they're fighting. Uh-huh. But there's like things where like they're like arms like glitch through each other and shit. Like, and like it's where they did CGI and they did it poorly and like someone's arm is there and then they go through and their arm's not there. And it's like weird shit like that happens. Like there's none of that in the old stuff. Like none of the weird editing. It's just like actual like choreographed and it's really, really done well.
For sure. The fight in episode one with Darth Maul and
that was Qui-Gon the start
and Obi-Wan was very good also. You're 100% right. Like George Lucas filmmaking with choreography, special effects, but also he went like in a lot of ways with the prequels, he went totally too far, you know, where he put too much stuff on green screen and there's debatable points and all kinds of stuff, but just to kind of address your initial point of, does George Lucas, is he a poor storyteller? I don't know that I agree with that. I think that he just, I don't know. I just think that he, he has a lot of good stuff in the prequels. He has a lot of good stuff in Clone Wars. And I think him and Dave Filoni, I wish that they had worked together for longer. I know you keep bringing in
someone else who helped him make good shit. Because by himself, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Dave Filoni guided him majorly. So let's just go back to, here's my point. And this is where I want to like, and I'll leave the floor to you after this. Okay. When Star Wars originally hit theaters, do you know where George Lucas was?
How would I know? That was 1977. Exactly. You wouldn't know so either.
It's a famous story. George Lucas was off with, the guy who did Indiana Jones. Well, I can't think of his name.
You Steven mean Spielberg. Harrison Ford? Oh, Steven Spielberg. No. Okay.
He was off with Steven Spielberg doing something for some other project or whatever. And is quoted as thinking that Star Wars was going to be like a nothing. He had no expectation for Star Wars. He wasn't there to watch it or prep for it to be this big explosion. It caught him off like guard almost that it blew up like it did. Right. And you go back now and you talk about how he's this amazing storyteller. Right. And okay, if he really had this whole grand plan and he had this whole idea of this whole storytelling that's going on, explain why Obi-Wan is literally a decrepit old man. But he knew all along, quote unquote, that he was going to be what he was in the prequels and be the age that he was going to be. And then him and Vader were really only like in their, 40s or something when what he recorded was some 70-year-old dudes. Like, I tell me that he had this grand plan when he cast those actors and did that.
Okay, So first of all, you said that I claimed that he was an amazing storyteller. That's
I didn't say you did. I said people.
I merely stated that I don't think he's a poor storyteller. Second of all, Star Wars was a passion project for him. Just because he didn't think it would take off and explode doesn't mean that he didn't.
I said that incorrectly.
He didn't love what he did.
He loved it. Yes.
Third of all, I don't know if George Lucas had a grand plan for the prequels and all that before Star Wars A New Hope exploded. But I will say that I've seen this argument that there's no way that Obi-Wan could be that old. And I just don't agree with that because we're talking about a character that
when you look at... And I do have to stop myself for 1 second. He did right off the bat call it episode 4.
He did. Yeah, you are correct. Yeah.
So it's not like after the fact he was like, you know what? We're going to call that episode 4.
Yeah.
It's like he had like a basic idea, but he didn't work out all the details, right? Like,
yeah, I just,
maybe that. So again, I'm backpedaling a little bit here.
Because I mean, we don't want to spend like, again, forever on the show, right? But on this particular topic, I just will say that I've seen this argument that there's some kind of disparity in age when you consider what Obi-Wan looks like in the Kenobi show versus what he looked like in the prequels versus episode 3 versus what he looks like in A New Hope, you know, 10 years later. And I don't agree with it because I think when you look at Kenobi's life and you look at what he went through, I think that changes the way people can age. And
you're talking about like the president, like how the president, when they leave office, how they look like they're an old decrepit skeleton versus
who they are. Like if you look at like Obama in 2008 versus when he left office every in 2016, which is only 8 years later. Like, I think that life and stress and emotion and what you go through and your experiences can definitely change and age you in different ways. And so like, I guess the point I'm making is that I think people are looking way too deeply into like they had a vision for what Kenobi could be. He needed to be this Jedi master that could train Luke. And so they cast an actor in that in episode 4. And maybe if they had like all of the knowledge in the world and all of the hindsight, maybe they would have found someone slightly younger. But I think we're looking way too deeply into it if that's our complaint. That's just my opinion. Also, I don't think he ripped off Dune. I think I'm deep into book 4, and I can tell you that Dune and Star Wars are just totally different things. The basic idea of the first book is I don't see enough similarities. I just don't. They're very different stories telling different things, different themes. I mean, yes, they're both set on desert planets, but is that our measure of what's the same now?
They both have spice. They both have like force powers. They both have.
So you're telling me that stories created in the 60s both have something that focuses on drugs, huh? I wonder how the fuck that happened. You know, like, okay. Come on.
Specifically spice. It's called the same thing. It's from the freaking dirt. It's both the same freaking type of drug.
The spice in Star Wars doesn't come from Tatooine. Where they get it from and how it is created is totally different to what it is in Dune.
You sure about that? Because I'm pretty sure in
The spice in Dune is like literally the shit from the worms. It's totally different.
It's okay, but it comes from the dirt that they're harvesting because that's where the worms are freaking, like, I guess, like leaving trails of it in the sand, right? Okay, it's basically from the dirt, right? They're harvesting it from the dirt.
And what they use spice for in Dune is totally, like, they use it to try to see the future. They use it.
They use it as like a fuel, they use it not to necessarily travel. A drug. Yeah,
right. Yeah, they use it to give the prescience that the navigators on the ships need to navigate them through space. Which is actually, when you think about, you see this theme a lot. It's even the same in Star Wars, actually, too, and some other sci-fi, that the idea of space travel being that you're maneuvering a ship at high speed through space, and so therefore you need someone to see the future a little bit, to know where things are, to steer the ship around it, versus something like Star Trek that views space travel as not necessarily something traveling really fast through space, but actually just like kind of moving space around it while the ship is sitting still. I think that's actually kind of interesting that there are different ways of thinking about how you would travel. I've seen
those two different, basically talking about, you know, there's two different, like which one is faster, right? There's one of them, which is like going from point A to point B and like take a piece of paper and draw a line on it. And like, that's how they're traveling. Whereas the other one is take the piece of paper, fold it in half, and the two pieces that touch each other, that's how one of them is traveling. Whereas the other one is going the distance. And I can't remember exactly. I have to stop and wrap my brain around the types of travel. But essentially, one of them is punching a hole in space and getting there. Whereas the other one is like physically traveling through. I think Star Wars is the one that's punching a hole and showing up. Whereas
No, that's Star Trek. Yeah, whereas Star Wars is more like traveling really fast through space.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. I just was thinking like they hit like warp 7 or whatever, you know what I mean, in Star Trek, and they're sitting there for a while it's going past them. Right. And whereas Star.
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe I've got sure this
Star,
wrong, but
I think that I'm pretty sure because Star Wars, it's like they load and then poof, they explode and the like stars go past them and it's like they're there.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe I get it backwards, but I'm thinking about in Zahn's books with Thrawn, how they don't have mechanical, you know, drives or whatever to navigate them through space. They actually have these, their children, effectively, that can see a little bit into the future, and they navigate the ships through space.
Precogs.
So, which is, again, that is, it's a similar idea to Dune. In Dune, they use the spice to put themselves into trances, and then they can actually see very small glimpses into the future. Then, of course, Paul Muad'Dib, his whole thing is that he's not only through the breeding and everything is he next level, but he's also able to absorb life as other people have experienced it. So, like, the Lady Jessica is a Bene Gesserit. And they have Reverend Mothers, and the Reverend Mothers use the spice to actually absorb all the memories from the previous Reverend Mother into them. And so because they've done that through so long that now they have memories and lives from, like, millennia, right?
Right.
But no male has ever been able to achieve that until Paul Muad'Dib. And then he, like, takes it into such another level where he can literally carve out an entire path through the future and be able to know exactly where everything is going and what's going to happen, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So, and he is like a messiah, like a religious leader. And a lot of what Dune is sort of a cautionary tale of following a religious leader and where that can lead you to ultimately, because in the end, he gets control and he basically leads legions of armies across the galaxy, just destroying everything in his path to conquer the galaxy. So, like, when you think about, like, that story, and you think about there was some kid who was an orphan and he learns how to use a lightsaber, and then he goes and fights his dad and tries to make him not be a bad guy. It's totally not the same fucking story.
Listen to me. Don't try to discredit me with all your logic, okay?
So, all right. Well, now that we've spent 30 minutes on this, should we talk about video games?
Sure.
All right, because you know what? Each and every week, we do get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and fill up monologues as you can handle in a week, simply because we love video games and discussing them. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy it, please share on social media or directly with your friends. The show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, or Instagram, all at TriCastGamingP1, and on our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platforms with your questions, and we'd be happy to share them on the show. All right, let's get into what we are playing. We've got kind of 2 weeks, I guess, to cover, because last week was episode 100. We didn't do this. I'll try to be kind of quick because I have been playing quite a few things, and I'll focus more on the games that I've finished. So since the last time we talked about it, I did finish. First, I finished Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. And let me tell you something. If you can pick this game up for like $30, because you're just kind of going right in for the campaign, I highly recommend it. This is such a cool little Cold War espionage story. I really, really enjoyed it. And the end has such a really interesting twist that I personally didn't see coming. And then it actually gives you a choice at the end. And there are two different endings to the game. And they're both really interesting in their own right. And I can't really say any more than that without, like, wholly spoiling it. But I really enjoyed it, and I did go back and, like, replay the final bits so that I could see the other ending instead of just YouTubing it, and that was really cool too, playing through all of that and seeing how all that went down. I really enjoyed this campaign. I think I wish that it was maybe another mission or two longer. I felt like there was a couple things they could have explored, which would have been really fun. But I love the idea of the fact that you're the CIA agent and you're trying to find this Russian operative that's planning a nuclear war. And you go through these different missions and you collect evidence and things like that. And you put it up on this board and you start connecting dots and you can review what you found. And then there's other side missions that you can engage in if you collect enough of the evidence in the levels. And then those side missions have, like, little mini puzzles associated with them. So, like, you know, you have to discern who are the actual targets that you need to get in the missions, which is pretty cool. I don't know. There's a lot of neat stuff in this campaign that I really, really liked. I thought Treyarch did a good job of it. I dug the 80s vibe. It's set in like 1982, like early 80s, CIA operatives. A lot of cool stuff. A lot of cool set piece levels too, like East Berlin, behind the Iron Curtain, you know, a weather radar station in the mountains, the Ural Mountains in Russia, you know, settings in Vietnam. You play a couple of missions in Vietnam, like during the war, things like that. Just really cool. Really, really liked it. I would say it's a solid three tryhards, like a high three tryhards. You know, this is a good game. I definitely recommend checking it out in between others. The campaign's only like 6 or 7 hours long doing everything, so you can breeze this in a weekend. Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. The second game that I finished since the last time we talked was Gran Turismo 7. So by finishing, what I mean is I've done all the menu books, completed, and then there's two extra menu books that unlock after you finish the 39 main ones. I did those as well. I did all the licenses, so I have my Super A license or whatever in the game. I played most of the cups and things like that in the game throughout playing all the menu books. I've done a bunch of the track trial runs where you have to get, you know, you have to turn a lap in a set amount of time to get, you know, bronze, silver, or gold. And that's actually how you get a lot of your money. Like you get like a million coin if you can get gold on those. And that's how I build up enough money to buy all like some of the more expensive cars. Mm-hmm. The only thing I think I'd like to do still in it is you can run like a 30-minute or 60-minute endurance race in the game, which is not something I've ever experienced in a racing game before. So I might try that once, but otherwise I've done, I think, everything that the game has to offer, at least for me. I'm not going to play online. So I feel comfortable saying that I finished. I put about close to 40 hours into this game. So like that's a lot of time in a racing game. As far as my final thoughts are on it, it never really changed. It's not all the way a simulation, and it's too close to being a simulation to be an arcade game. Yeah, and I've always found
Gran Turismo always to be anyway.
Yeah, so I found that, you know, I think that ultimately this series is just not really for me. I'm not saying that it's a bad game by any way. If it was a bad racing game, I would tell you. I'm just saying it's stuck kind of in between two extremes of the genre, and I need to be in one or the other. I either need to be playing a simulator or I need to be playing a pure arcade game. And, so for me, it's just not quite there. But I think it's a good game. If you like racing games or you like Gran Turismo in general, I think you're gonna find that it's a really quality build. I think they fixed a lot of the main issues that was there at the start of the game. It doesn't seem too bad in earning credits and things like that. So yeah, I don't know. I'll probably give it three tryhards for me. I think it's a good game. You know, if you like racing games, check it out in between others. But I think that's about the limit of it for me with Gran Turismo 7. All right, after that, still playing through Lego Skywalker Saga. Finished episode 2 with my daughter last weekend. We'll play episode 3 this weekend. So I'm kind of just doing like one movie a weekend with my daughter. They take about 2 hours or so to get through like a movie in the game. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. I still kind of feel the same way that I think that they've lost a little bit in their mission setup or design with trying to cram so much into this game. I think some of the past Lego games have done their missions better, the puzzles, the building, the things like that that goes on in the game. They've lost a bit here, but the in-between bits, the worlds that they've created and the amount of characters and things like that that you can do with people is a lot of fun. So I don't know. I guess it depends on which side of it that you like the most with these Lego games, but that's been my impression so far on it. And then one or two more games. I know I've played a lot. I've been bouncing around, but I'm still playing Warhammer Chaos Bane as well. I don't really have anything new to say about it. The environments are really fun. I'm deep into the second chapter. So the first chapter kind of focuses on Nurgle. Like if you're a Warhammer person, you know this. Like there's like four Chaos Gods. And the first episode or the first chapter focuses on fighting followers of Nurgle and Nurgle champions. So that's like more of like the the pestilence and disease and stuff like that. The second chapter has been focused on fighting Khorne and followers of Khorne, which they're like the blood god, the people that just like to just kill and kill things for the sake of it. I'm assuming chapter three will focus on either Slaanesh or I'm drawing a blank on what the other one is. And then, of course, the other chapter will cover the other one because there's four main chaos gods in Warhammer. But it's cool because it means that you're fighting different enemies in each chapter. You kind of have different settings in each chapter. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, it's all about power. It's all about killing lots of enemies at one time. You know, it's that same Diablo feeling. If it's, of course, not as good of a game as Diablo, but it's that same style, like isometric. Kill lots of enemies in the level, collect all the loot. Find the gear that's better than your character, discard the rest of the stuff, go out to the next mission, find a bunch of loot, make yourself more powerful, you know, get your abilities, all that kind of stuff. That's the game, but set in Warhammer setting. And then finally, I'm just playing tons of Destiny. I love Destiny. It's so much fun right now. I've said tons about Destiny. It's like one of my favorite games of all time, and I'm still playing it. I don't think you need to hear any more from me about it.
Yeah, I just can't. I don't know. It's weird. There's sometimes where I get done on a game and I'm just done on Destiny. I just can't. I loved it too. Can't do it no more. I'm out.
I totally get it. And I've been that way with Destiny 2 before, where I'm done with it and I need to be done with it. And then like six months later,
I bought the expansion to win and just I spent like a week and I'm like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Like Shadowkeep was like that for me. Like I bought Shadowkeep and I played this story and then I was like, yeah, I don't want to play any more of this.
Yep.
But I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a time and a place thing. I don't have any other games like this right now. Whatever it is, you know, it's just, it's got me hooked.
Did you see that TikTok I linked the group from Dr. Disrespect?
No, I can't say that I did.
You didn't watch it, you son of a...
I try to go back and catch all your TikToks, but if y'all send me videos during the day when I'm at work, I don't watch them.
When you said that, you said all your TikToks, as if I'm like blasting out hundreds of TikToks. I sent maybe two
stuff
this week.
You send stuff, and Adam will send stuff, and Michael will send stuff. Like,
the most random something that just made him laugh and he thinks is hilarious. And so he sends it to the group. I'm like, what does this have to do with anything that we talk about? I don't understand.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I don't share videos in the chat. Everybody else does.
Long story short, it was Dr. Disrespect basically raging out as he does and yelling about like how, you know, it's a $121 billion industry. You know, where are all the games? Like, I don't understand. How can we not have any games to play right now? Like someone, something. Like it's a $121 billion industry and there's no games to play right now. Like what the hell? How can all these studios exist and none of them have anything that's releasing?
So right now? I have an opinion on that. I don't know if people want to hear it, but I have my thoughts on why this is happening.
Okay. I don't know that I want to go down this path, but go for it.
I think it is 100% to do with remote work. I think remote work is proven to be much more inefficient than people believe or want to believe.
I was one of the people saying that in the very beginning. I agree.
And I think that now that they've let everyone go home, people don't want to come back to the office. Yep. And are just threatening to leave and quit. And their skills and talents are too important. Yep. They have to hold them. But video games just can't. I mean, video games is an art and it's a collaborative art. These bigger games are made by literally hundreds, even thousands of employees, like all of the Call of Duties, collaborating together on something. And it's
everyone that I know of who works from home and is in the like tech or gaming type of community plays video games all day long while they're supposed to be working. Like everyone that I know.
Yeah. So it's just, like, it's okay, just proven to be, like,
I have to do this. What is the like have to, and I like minimal do what I can to like show that I worked. And other than that, I'm playing video games all day long. Like just go into like Steam or whatever and everything and just show that I'm offline. So people can't see what I'm doing. And then I'm just playing, you know, just playing games all day long. Like that's everyone that I know. It works.
So it's just, it's proven to be significantly more inefficient. And honestly, it's going to cause games to cost more. And if that cost gets passed on to me in shitty fucking microtransactions and all kinds of other stuff, that's going to piss me off to no end. I just, my opinion.
Okay, so I've been playing V Rising.
There you go. Hey, listen, I told you, you may not want to know what my opinion is.
So V Rising is a game that's out on Steam. It's a PC game, and I won't have to spend a whole lot of time on it other than saying I've been playing it for basically just this week. I'm going to be gone out of town all next week, so I will not basically be playing it much more until the following week when I get back. Tomorrow is my wife's birthday, so I'll be spending the day hanging out with her. So I've probably done with it for the week. But it's really good. I'm enjoying it a lot so far. By far the best way to describe it. I was reading like reviews and stuff online about it. V Rising, V as in Vampire Rising. Mm-hmm. And, I can't remember. I'd planned on making a Count Dracula joke there, or the Count, you know, like V for Vampire. I don't know.
There you go. That is something.
Yeah, that is something. Look, it's Valheim. That's what it is. It's vampire version of Valheim. It's got some really cool mechanics to it that I really like, where you, it's like every other, you know, survival where you, you know, are out collecting wood and stone and, you know, leather and furs and all these things. Right. And then crafting stuff and building your base. But then you have, you know, rather than having food hunger and thirst, you have thirst, which is blood, and you have to feed on either animals or people out in the world, and that gives you this big blood pool, and your blood pool is what you regenerate your health back off of, and some other use it for abilities, etc. And dependent on what type of blood you get in your system, you get different bonuses. So like if you get creature blood, you get movement speed bonus, etc. If you go after a warrior, you get a bonus for like the amount of damage you physically do. If you go for an assassin, you have higher, you like prey off an assassin, you get higher crit chance, things like that. But then there's different grades of these people out in the world. And so like there's stronger or weaker creatures or people out there, and they have pure levels of blood. And so as you're attacking them, it'll show what their blood level is, and you can choose to feed on them as they get low in health. And, if they have a 7% blood level, then you get a small benefit. If they have a 80%, purity of blood, then you get a big bonus and, up to 100%, but it's really rare. I mean, it's normal to get things in the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kind of percentage. That's a really cool game mechanic that I really like that I've not seen in any other kind of game. It's fun. It's Valheim with vampires. That's what it is.
Yeah. I've been watching some videos while you've been describing it.
It's overhead, sort of like Diablo. So when you go to Steam and you look at the reviews on it, it's funny, all the different reviews, people are like, it's like if Ark and Diablo had a baby, which I'm like, not to me, it's more like Diablo and Valheim is really, I don't think it's, I mean, someone who says it's like Ark, it's nothing like Ark other than it's a survival game. Like it's nothing like Ark. It's more Valheim and Diablo. That would be a better version of what it is.
Yeah. I like these games. I feel like I'd have to put so much time in it to figure out if I could ever play one. And I don't have the patience every time I try to play one of these survival games.
Well, so this has been me, Kat, Ginger, and Dark all playing V Rising together. And it's been a blast. It's been good.
Yeah. I mean, I actually really like its art style. I think it like balances, it rides that line between trying to be a little bit realistic, but also a little bit cartoony pretty well. Sometimes these games, they go too far. And this is what Diablo does really well, actually. Yeah, Diablo's really good at that as well. Like, Diablo's a really crazy good art style in that regard. But yeah, I think it looks really good. I like how it does seem to find a good balance between those two. Because I really dislike the super cartoony games. But the ones that try to be super realistic looking when you know that they don't have the graphic fidelity to do that just kind of look
junky. But again, this is very similar to Valheim in that essentially you get to a point where if you're ready to advance your tech or advance your things, you have to go hunt down a boss. The big difference here is in Valheim, it's like, okay, here's the six total bosses. And it's like, there's like, it's almost like an Age of Empires type, like where you're going from like, you know, medieval to, or Stone Age to medieval or whatever, right? And medieval to Castle Age. I mean, it's like, there's like six like major periods. That's kind of how Valheim is set up. Whereas V Rising is much smaller. And let's say there's 40 different bosses instead of six. And so they break all the techs up into smaller sections. And then they put all these bosses across the world and you have to track them. So there's this altar you go to, you click on the altar, you find a boss that you want to go after. And as you get stronger in levels, new bosses appear on it. And it tells you kind of what they unlock to get them. And you track them and it gives you like a blood trail. And you just like follow the blood trail out until you find them out in the open world of where they're at. And then you have to, and each one of them has a unique set of skills and is a different kind of, you know, strategy to get them killed. But when you kill them, then you, you know, gain those abilities and or technology, etc. I mean, it, so far it's been really good. I like it.
Yeah. It's got very positive reviews on Steam.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, Mike first mentioned it. It's only been out for about a month. Mike first mentioned it, you know, a few weeks ago, actually. Said that like all the top streamers were playing it, and I had seen that too, and I was kind of like, you know, I don't know, I just wasn't ready to pull the trigger. And then we ran into this whole like there's nothing to play, and we were all kind of trying to figure something out, and I was like, I just want to look it up. So I looked it up on Steam and it had all those great reviews, and I was like, all right, man, I'm gonna give it a try. And I think it was only like $19. Man, it's been great. Yeah,
and it's on sale right now for the Steam summer sales.
Oh really?
So yeah, I mean, it's only 10% off, but you know, it's a couple dollars cheaper than that right now.
Yeah.
Lots of good reviews. The one I've actually been looking at, and I don't want to dovetail too far, but you know, I'm in this major, major Dune kick right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And just a few weeks ago, or I guess about a month ago, Dune Spice Wars launched into early access. And it's an RTS, like a, what do they call them? 4X strategy game or something like that for... You know what I'm talking about. The what is that term called? I'm pretty sure it's 4X strategy game.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
No, no.
I wish I could...
4D? Yeah. Virtual reality?
Maybe it's... No, it's not 4D. It's 4X. 4X strategy games. This is a real thing. Like, there's an article here on PC Games. Like, so like Age of Wonders, Galactic Civilization, Civ 6, those are all considered 4X strategy games.
Okay. I mean, is it turn-based? Is that what you mean?
What is 4X strategy game?
Okay, we're all getting a lesson now on what the hell 4X is.
Yeah, okay. 4X is a subgenre of strategy-based computer and board games that include both turn-based and real-time strategy.
Okay.
The gameplay involves building an empire. Emphasis is placed upon economic and technological development, as well as a range of military and non-military routes to supremacy. So Age of Empires falls under this too. The earliest 4X games borrowed ideas from board games and 1970s tech-based computer games.
Now, I don't think Age of Empires would fall into this. I think this is more like a Lords of the Realm or a Warhammer type, where so like for instance Warhammer Civilizations, those, the big thing with them when you get those is, okay, it's an RTS, but when you go into battle, it's like a real time, like you actually do the battle. You're no longer just like it's auto generating the battle or whatever. you're like controlling the soldiers. You're telling the units to go over here and go over there. You know, do you know what I'm talking about? Like you play like, like a Warhammer.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I understand what you're saying. I'm looking at this like best 10 best and they're mentioning like Sid Meier's and the Civ games.
Yeah.
And Age of Wonders. Those are the ones listed. So yeah. Anyway, it's supposed to be like a 4X strategy game in that it's an RTS, but the 4X, I guess, comes... I'm not. I and this is why I haven't pulled the trigger yet. Just
all in on the story of
I'm Dune. Just so in on Dune right now, but I am thinking about pulling the trigger and trying it out this weekend. So But it's interesting because it's like, you know, it's combat, it's base building, but then there's also like the politics and how you can try to sway the Landsraad council, which again, if you know Dune, the Landsraad is like the council of all the other families, you know, the major houses and minor houses and how they rule the galaxy. So you can try to sway that as well as having a spy network. And those are like the four X's, I guess, the four ways of trying to build your empire on. And basically it's just like, is the Atreides going to win or are the Harkonnens going to win? It's kind of the thing, but they also have the Fremen in there as another, the Fremen and, smugglers, I think are the other two that you can play as, but yeah, I'm thinking about trying that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought you'd find that interesting that I would even consider an RTS.
I do find it interesting. Yeah. I can't wait to hear how much you hate it.
Yeah, probably so. All right, well, let's kick it into the news, which I thought, considering that we'd been gone for 2 weeks, that there'd be a lot more, but there really isn't. So here we go, down the news feed run. Number one, Bungie is seeking over $7.6 million in damages from a Destiny YouTuber who allegedly impersonated the company in order to issue a series of bogus DMCA strikes against fellow content creators. This comes after the studio said in March that it was investigating a series of copyright takedowns on YouTube that had not originated from the company or its partners. Later that month, it filed a lawsuit claiming that John Doe's had used a quote, hole in YouTube's DMCA process security, end quote, to impersonate the studio and sabotage the work of Destiny content creators. In a revision of its original complaint, which was spotted by the Gamer Post, the defendant has been named as Nick Miner, a.k.a. YouTuber Lord Notso. Last December, the YouTube channel of Lord Notso was issued a takedown notice after publishing music from the original soundtrack of the Destiny expansion, The Taken King,
which Bungie talked about that a while back.
Yeah, we did, which Bungie said infringed copyrights and violated its policy on fan use of intellectual property. Bungie claims that, seemingly in retaliation, Miner created fake Gmail accounts in order to pose as the studio's brand protection vendor CSC and send out a wave of fraudulent takedown notices targeting videos posted by members of the Destiny community. I don't know how much I have to say other than holy shit, this is a wild story, and this bro is about to find himself in a world of debt.
Right, because $7.6 million. So, but here's what I don't know. I've not, I'll be honest with you. I've not like done a bunch of research on this. So I don't know, you know, when you read this, it looks like Bungie is basically saying he was vindictive against Bungie and went after Bungie, right? Like he did some things that tried to hurt Bungie, which I guess this still hurts Bungie. But to me, the way it sounds is he went after other YouTubers. It was almost more because he's a Destiny content creator himself, right? Mm-hmm. It was almost more of like, I want to just get rid of my competition so that I'm the big Destiny guy, right? That, like, to me, that's kind of how I originally kind of thought on this. But I haven't done a lot of research to know exactly what's going on, which ultimately, if there's less creators for Destiny, it does still hurt Bungie too. But I just viewed it more of, not necessarily so much of him doing like something against Bungie, as more as he was just trying to get the other creators out of the way.
So what I was reading a little bit of this, and again, I'm with you in that I don't know a whole lot about it, but what I was reading seemed to suggest that he was trying to make it look like Bungie were unfairly mass targeting content creators. And so basically he did some stuff that that sort of made it look like he was a victim of Bungie, and then to sort of encourage his case or sort of what's the word for it, make his case look better, he started creating these extra accounts and going after other Destiny creators.
So
he
can say,
look at all these people that are getting targeted by Bungie's shitty.
You. So that makes sense. That's what he was doing. He was trying to basically make his whole, you know, where he got takedown notice because of that it was unfair and Bungie was being assholes versus he did something wrong.
Right.
Yeah, I get you now.
That's what I've read.
You're trying to do a bit of a cover up, essentially.
Yeah. But again, it's not, I haven't read too much beyond a couple stories here, but that's what I've gleaned. So, I mean, this dude is going to be in some serious shit, man.
Yeah.
I think what he's done is pretty illegal.
Yeah, play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Or expensive prizes.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, and number two, another Destiny lawsuit or Bungie lawsuit. So Bungie has also won another lawsuit. This one was where Destiny 2, a Destiny 2 cheat company will have to pay $13.5 million in damages. The Destiny publisher had filed this lawsuit in August of 2021, in which it claimed that Elite Boss Tech's cheating software infringed on Destiny 2's copyright. As reported by Torrent Freak, the lawsuit has now ended with both sides agreeing to end the dispute. As a result of the agreement, Elite Boss Tech will pay $13.5 million in statutory damages and will be prohibited from creating, distributing, or making available any future software that infringes on Bungie's rights. Elite Boss Tech accepted that its cheating software both injects code into Destiny 2's copyrighted code and features a graphical overlay that integrates with the code. This creates an unlicensed derivative work and therefore counts as copyright infringement. The company, though, is still selling cheats for other games, including Halo Infinite, CSGO, Dead by Daylight, Apex Legends, and Warframe. Yeah, holy shit, man.
Okay, so a couple thoughts on this. One, good that someone that, you know, I don't understand the whole cheating community at all and paying for cheats. And good that this company is having to pay $13.5 million, and hopefully that freaking really hurts them. And shame on all you bullshit gamers buying all these cheats, you freaking losers. I'll just straight up call you. I don't mind losing you as a listener. If you are one of these people
with you,
you are a fucking loser.
Yeah,
it's just anyway,
destroys the game for everybody.
Yes.
And to what end? Like, oh, cool. Like, you cheated and you killed a bunch of people.
I don't understand it at all. What a loser. But the other thing I find funny with this, though, is that it comes on here and says on this that it prohibits them from creating, distributing, or making available any future software that infringes on Bungie's rights. This doesn't prohibit them. Anyone is always prohibited from that. Like if you ever infringe on someone's copyright, this happens. So it's not like, well, because they lost the lawsuit, now they can't infringe on our copyright.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you always can't do that. It's just now specifically spoken, basically saying like, hey, we've done it. You've done it once. If you do it again, it could be even a harsher penalty.
Like, yeah, we won't have to go through all this other bullshit. You'll just get fucked.
Right. So it's just funny that basically they just added that in there for additional, like, if you get caught again, like, we're really going to be able to hammer you because you're never allowed to do that. Like, so it's not like, well, now they're not allowed to mess up the copyright, but other people still are. No.
Yeah. No. No. And it's crazy that this company and like, apparently it's a subscription service too. So you can pay $20 a month per game, or you can pay $30 a month for all the games.
Sheesh.
That this it's crazy. I don't even fuck this shit. And
but again, goes to show, look, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, Call of Duty, you know, was pretty ruined by cheaters, and a lot of these big games like this have so many cheaters. I've been in these lobbies, you know, with Apex or whatever, with cheaters, you know, with Fortnite or whatever, and it's just like so obvious, blatant obvious you're being, you know, taken out by a cheater, you know. And it's just like these guys, all these companies have anti-cheats, et cetera, and they clearly don't work, right? These companies around them. It's a major business for lots of companies that make all these cheats. I just don't know what they do, man. Like, and other than just, again, you people are losers.
Yeah, don't do this shit. Don't do this shit, people. All right, number three, a little bit of Nintendo news for you nerds out there. Nintendo has released a 20-minute presentation showing Xenoblade Chronicles 3 in action. The Direct included new information on the game's plot and profiles its six main characters. The video also offers more glimpses of the game's large open world, as well as some of the enemies players can expect to encounter. Additionally, it goes into detail on the battle system, showing its similarities and differences to those of previous Xenoblade games. Nintendo has also announced a $30 Xenoblade Chronicles 3 expansion pass, which will offer four waves of DLC, including a, quote, brand new story scenario, end quote. As a reminder, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was originally planned for a September release, but in one of the strangest moves and rarest moves ever, Nintendo actually brought that release date forward to July 29th. This is a game that's always looked kind of fascinating, but then I look at the, like, how long to beat, and it's like 80 hours of a Japanese RPG, and I'm like,
it's just not my kind of game, man.
I can't. Yeah, I just can't. But it's apparently really popular, so our listeners who are big fans of Nintendo out there, maybe go check this out if you haven't. Xenoblade Chronicles 3 dedicated Nintendo Direct. All right, number four, Sony Interactive Entertainment is the latest company to pull out of Gamescom 2022. In a statement issued to German publication Games Wirtschaft, I guess that's how you say that. I don't know. A spokesperson for PlayStation for
I read it as witchcraft the first time I saw it. So
it does kind of look like that. I think it's like Wirtschaft or something like that. I don't speak German. Anyway, a spokesperson for the PlayStation firm confirmed it will not attend this year's event, which is due to take place in August and will be its first in-person show since the pandemic started. Other companies, including Nintendo, Activision Blizzard, and Take-Two Interactive, have said they will not attend Gamescom Return. VGC News reports that one main issue for these publishers is that they have simply stopped planning pre-release game demos since the pandemic, such as those made available at events like Gamescom, and thus would have little to show at a big public show. Gamescom 2022 is set to take place from August 24th to 28th and will be a hybrid event held on-site in Cologne and simultaneously online.
I mean, will it though? If you don't have Nintendo and you don't have Sony and you don't have Activision Blizzard and you don't have Take-Two and you don't, who's gonna be there? What are you showing?
I think supposedly Xbox will be there.
Oh, okay. I like it. Never mind. It's big. It's
huge. I was waiting for that.
I don't know. There'll
be a lot of indie developers there. You know, people like Capcom and things like that will be there. They have like 250, I think, companies on their website that are scheduled to attend.
I mean, again, but this feels like still just more bad news for like an E3, right? Like, you got to thank E3, who's still saying like, yeah, we're coming back, is looking at something like this and going like, are we?
Yeah, so Gamescom has always been very different though, right? So Gamescom wasn't for the press. It was for the gamers, right? It was for the public, which always made it very different, much more like a Europe's version of like a
PAX.
PAX, yeah. Thank you. All right. Before we move on, I just wanted to say real quick that I thought VGC's news report was kind of interesting. And I could believe this, that a lot of these publishers literally just are not making demos anymore. Because I heard that those were always like dedicated slices of the game that actually took a lot of time to create.
Yeah.
And that might be one of the things that they're cutting out to try to help with the inefficiencies of working from home.
Sure.
And so then it's like, would you like to come to our show? And they're like, well, we haven't got anything and there's no way we could have anything ready. So we just show up and have some trailers. And so there's no point in us being there.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, look, I've never been a demo guy, like ever. Like demos, I don't know. I don't enjoy them. I don't like them. So I don't know. I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, there's a vibe about those shows that are kind of fun. I've been to a PAX before. It's kind of neat, but you know, I don't know. It's sad to see it go. That's my final take, though, is that it is kind of sad to see some of the stuff go. All right, number five, Diablo Immortal has earned Blizzard more than $24 million during its first 2 weeks of availability. That's according to data from market intelligence tool AppMagic, first published by Pocket Gamer, which shows that the mobile title was downloaded over 8.5 million times during the same period. This reportedly makes Diablo Immortal Blizzard's second highest earner in the mobile space behind the mobile version of its card game Hearthstone. The game is reportedly most popular in the U.S., where users accounted for 43% of all revenue, while South Korea provided 23%. All I have to say is, if we ever thought that this kind of BS monetization was going to end, this is just further proof that it's not. It's not ever going to end. People will just wail, and these companies can rake in money from it.
Yep. So I was watching a thing on basically, so like, do you know the streamer Asmongold?
I do not.
Okay. So he's a big, he's been around for a long time. He's a big streamer. He, you know, kind of cut his teeth on WoW, right? So he's a big, you know, Blizzard guy. And he's moved on to some other things. He was one of the big streamers during, Elden Ring. Like, he really was all in on Elden Ring. That was real big.
Okay.
And so now he's moved over to Diablo Immortal. But it's, he's been kind of basically been called a hypocrite, because, you know, there's people like me and you and a lot of other gamers here that are saying, you know, like how ridiculous the spending is, and where you have to spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to, you know, reach the max, all that kind of stuff. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, so Asmongold is one of the guys who is talking negatively like we are about this and how ridiculous the game is set up and how crazy amounts of money you have to spend in order to get these things. And so in his, you know, what he's doing is he's putting up, like, in the top right corner of his stream, he has like a tracker to show how much money he's spending. Right.
And okay.
He's dumping crazy amounts of money into the game. And he'll do stuff like he'll run a session where he runs through a dungeon without the, like, bonuses from these, like, gems and stuff you have to pay for, and like, and shows like, okay, this is what the kind of stuff you get. And then, like, does a money dump and shows like how crazy, like, the difference is. Right. And so basically he's being called a hypocrite because there's people basically saying, like, you are part of the reason this is a problem is because you're feeding them money. And they're getting the money off of it, which makes them continue to do it. If you people would stop spending the money on it and giving them this, then this would stop, right? But he's like dumping crazy amounts of money into the game. And his whole view is he's doing it to prove how ridiculous it is. Whereas people are like, you're just feeding them, you know? You're trying to use it as an excuse. And really all you're doing is you're just playing the game the exact way they want you to.
Yeah, I could see both ways. I mean, listen, if, you know, people can, like, kind of brush it off by saying, oh, you know, you don't have to pay for it. You can still earn this stuff eventually. Like, you don't have to pay for it. But if he can sit there and show you on stream, like, this is how the game plays without it. Yeah. And this is how the game plays with it. And there's, like, a very discernible difference.
Yeah, it is.
But, like, I don't see why you have to keep dumping money. Like, you could do it once and, like, show it and prove it and then be, like, done with it. You don't have to, like, keep dumping money.
Even Blizzard has come out and said there is specific gear qualities that literally, not like rare chance, will not, cannot drop without the paid gems. Like, can't do it. Like, you physically cannot progress to past a certain point. And they're sneaky about it too. What they've done here is essentially when you play the game, and I've played it a little bit. It feels like a normal Diablo game, you know, with a little jankier controls and a little less graphics, right? Because it's mobile. But it feels like a normal Diablo game up until like level 30. And like, once you hit level 30, like, all of your progression for story and everything you've been doing completely, totally halts, and everything turns into doing all of this side stuff because it turns into like what is a normal mobile game, which is basically like you have these lightning and you can only play for the time that you have this lightning basically. And then your lightning's out and then you have to rest. And you know what I mean? Like, they do. Yeah. It goes back into normal things where you, the only progression and only way you can continue to do things you want to do is to spend money, right? Like, yeah. So they sidetrack you big time on all this other stuff and keep you busy with these other things, and your progression slows down drastically. And but they get you going where you feel like it feels really good, and you're playing for about, you know, if you're playing like a casual mobile game or whatever, about a week, and you're thinking this is awesome, and then everything changes and it completely shifts.
Yeah, no, that's bullshit. I don't like it.
I don't either.
I have not downloaded Diablo Immortal.
I did, and I uninstalled it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not even going to go first. I think you guys have shown me all I need to see. Yep. So, all right, number six, Sony Interactive Entertainment is reportedly getting ready to announce several new hardware products, including a PS5 Pro controller. In a report published on TryHard Guides, industry insider Tom Henderson claims to have heard from several sources that the platform holder will unveil new hardware at the end of June, although this won't include a new console. Described to Henderson as a, quote, genuine professional controller, end quote, for PS5, the new pad will reportedly feature removable analog sticks and grips, trigger stops, and back paddles. What are you laughing at?
It's a Xbox Elite controller.
Yeah, 100%. But I mean, Xbox are not the first one to have done Elite
controllers. I know, but I don't know. Yeah. They're acting like it's this big thing, and I'm just like, I mean, these have kind of already existed from non-PlayStation branded, like, you know.
Yeah. So from the PlayStation community, this is a big deal because they've been asking for it forever. They're like, why don't you freaking do what Microsoft does and do like a first-party true...
Right.
Elite Pro controller. Like, we want this. So yeah. Yes, they're late to the party and we should laugh at them a little bit for it, but this is a big deal for PlayStation. Well,
but I will throw a shout out to, or I say a shout out, something else that says on here is, you know, that there are several new hardware products. I would think that part of that too is VR.
Possibly. I know for sure that they're going to come out with some new headset. That's a new headset line. Okay,
there you go. There's one on
And this controller, hopefully, which I'm all in. Like, if they put out a proper Pro controller for, you know, in the $150 mark, like the Xbox one, I'm definitely all in for that.
Yeah. I mean, and again, any hardware could even be something like, you know, these like hard drives and things like that, you know, these like memory, you know, sticks, et cetera, that are all becoming a thing. It could be stuff like that too. I mean, it could be all sorts of stuff.
We'll just have to wait and see. It says end of June, which we only have a week left in June, so hopefully we'll see that soon. Mm-hmm. All right, number seven, one more Sony story. Sony has officially announced that the Gran Turismo movie will be released next year. Deadline reports that the film, simply titled Gran Turismo, currently has a release date of August 11th, 2023. Neil Blomkamp, the director of Demonic, Chappie, Elysium, and District 9, is set to direct the movie, which will be produced by Sony's Columbia Pictures Studio. According to Sony's brief plot description, quote, based on a true story, the film is the ultimate wish fulfillment tale of a teenage Gran Turismo player whose gaming skills won a series of Nissan competitions to become an actual professional race car driver, end quote.
It's not the path I thought they were going to go with this movie. I was thinking the whole time it's Fast and Furious or something along those lines. Like,
yeah, no.
That's kind of, I mean, that's cool. I had no idea that's the route they're going, which I'll say, I like this director. All the stuff he's done, I thought has been good. You know?
Yeah, give me like a Rocky movie, but for, you know,
e-racers. Yeah, I mean, I see this as kind of like a, you know, basically, you know, a guy who goes from rags to riches into esports, right? Kind of thing. And it's kind of a, it's a Rocky or a Moneyball. You know, or a Million Dollar Baby, whatever. That's probably a bad example. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, what's cool is that this is loosely, as it says, based on a true story. This really has happened. They've had competitions where they have found the best of the best of the best Gran Turismo players and given them opportunities to go to driving schools. Yeah. And there's at least one that has competed in some of the biggest motorsports races in the world since he won those competitions. So it's kind of a neat idea. And we'll see what they come up with.
Vice versa, it's hilarious that when during the peak of COVID, when they stopped doing racing and they swapped and started doing like iRacing and stuff like that, you know, in the meantime, how horrible some of these professional drivers were at the like virtual reality versions of their game. Like, and they had like all of the like highest end gear to that were supposed to be like simulation style, and they were effing wretched.
I mean, it's six of one. Dale Earnhardt Jr., very, very talented race car driver in real life. He's one of the top ranked iRacing drivers. In NASCAR oval racing on iRacing. So it's, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. There is definitely a gamification a little bit of even these simulations. And it was really interesting to listen to a lot of the professional drivers talk about it. That said, they still jumped in and were like way better than me. Okay. Oh, so even like they may not have been good in comparison to the top e-racers, but they are still like jumping in and way better than me. For sure. So, all right. Number eight, our final topic. General manager of the Diablo franchise has stated that the upcoming Diablo 4 will be supported with content for years after release. This comes from a tweet following the reveal during the Xbox showcase, in which Diablo GM Rod Ferguson said in part, quote, "To be clear, D4 is a full price game built for PC, PS, Xbox audiences. We are committed to delivering an incredible breadth of content after launch for years to come, anchored around optional cosmetic items and full story-driven expansions. More details soon," end quote. This feels like a, hey, I know you all hate Diablo Immortal right now. I promise you, Diablo 4 is not that.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. Because this statement did nothing for me. I'm like, yeah, that's what I have always thought it was. But I guess there's people out there panicking, going like, oh, shit. This is the future of Diablo, and that's this is what they're going to turn around and do, is just do a full-scale PC / console version of Immortal, right? And he's going like, no. You know, this means nothing. Diablo experience. Right. This means nothing to me. I've always expected to pay top dollar for, you know, Diablo, unless by then, by that time, it's on Game Pass and I get it as free, and you PlayStation, you know, scrubs have to pay for it. I'm cool with that too.
Hey, listen, I play on both consoles because I do not move myself to one console. I don't have to worry about the wars. I can just play where it's best.
Listen to me. I wanted to call you a scrub. Okay, just go with it. Let it happen. Move on.
Nice try. Before we move out of news, I do want to point something out, and I'd love some feedback. So in this one, you know, I kind of paired some stories together and then I kind of split it up. I never know, like, do people want me to give you like all of the PlayStation news, then all of the Xbox news, then like, or do people like me to kind of move around the story flow? So write in, let me know what you like to see and hear, and I'll tailor the way I compile these news stories in the future. So, you know, if you want essentially sections for your hardware, let me know. If not, I'll just keep kind of sprinkling it around and jumping back and forth through the news stories. What do you think, Jason? You have no opinion?
I mean, I'm gonna chase the squirrels no matter what we do. Let's just be honest.
That's true. All right, well, let's jump into game announcements. And there has actually been a few since the last time we held the show. Number one, A Plague Tale Requiem has received a release date and a new extended gameplay trailer. Asobo Studios game, which is the sequel to A Plague Tale Innocence, will be released on October 18th of this year for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PC, and Switch in the form of a cloud version. It will also be available day one with Game Pass. I actually been thinking about kind of going and checking out the Plague Tale Innocence. That's already on Game Pass. I've been thinking about checking it out. Just, I've heard some good things about it, but I'm just not sure. I mean, no barrier to entry. I should just go see the first hour and see if I'd like this. All right, number two, the Switch version of No Man's Sky has been delayed from its original summer release window. Developer Hello Games has confirmed that the game will now be released on October 7th. So you Switch guys wanting to play this like 5 years after the game released, you've got to wait a little bit longer. All right, number three, Blizzard has confirmed that the Overwatch 2 beta will launch on June 28th. Testers will get to play as the new tank hero, the Junker Queen, and experience a new map. The beta will be available on PCs and consoles. So if you want to go check that out, that will be next week. Make sure you sign up. Number four, Blizzard has confirmed a 2022 launch window for the next World of Warcraft expansion, Dragonflight. Announced in April alongside Wrath of the Lich King Classic, the expansion will include four new zones for players to explore and introduce World of Warcraft's first ever combination race and class, Drakthyr Evokers. I don't think you're going back for that, are you, Jason?
Yeah, I'm not. No. Nope. I'm all right. Yeah, same thing. I love it's number one game all time. Can't play it ever again.
Can't play it anymore. Yep. All right. Number five, Final Fantasy VII Remake Part II's first trailer has been revealed.
Hell yeah.
And it looks freaking badass, confirming that Square Enix is planning a trilogy of remake games. As confirmed during the Final Fantasy VII 25th anniversary stream, Part II, officially called Rebirth, is scheduled to release for PlayStation 5 only next winter. Jason, will you buy a PS5 to play that?
No. Okay. I'll do exactly what I've done this time. I'll wait for it to show up 17 years afterwards on PC, and then I'll buy it from there.
Unless
by that time we've got our PlayStation subscription and I'll freaking sign up and I'll play freaking, you know, whatever, you know, version of it has this on it. And then I'll unsubscribe from that bad boy as soon as I'm done.
Well, speaking of PC, number six, Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade has now been released on Steam. So, Jason, you can go check it out if you want. It's been on
Epic for a little while, so.
That's true. It did go to Epic first, and now it is on Steam. As confirmed during the Final Fantasy VII 25th anniversary stream, the game was released on Steam June 17th of this year and is compatible with the Steam Deck hardware.
That part's cool.
Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade is a PS5 update of the 2022 RPG featuring improved visuals, faster load times, photo mode, haptic feedback, as well as the new Yuffie DLC story called Intermission. I haven't actually played the Yuffie DLC. I need to go check that out. Have you gotten a chance to play the remake?
Nope. As much as I love that game, I have not played it. So
I'm a little
scared
it.
Too. So
I loved it. But of course I never played the original Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I love the original. Love it.
Yeah. All right. Number seven, Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, a modern remaster of the PSP title, has been announced. The new version of the game, which appears to use the same engine as Final Fantasy VII Remake, will come to PS5, Xbox Series, PC, Nintendo Switch, and last-gen consoles this winter. Okay, I got a small bone to pick here. How come the whole Final Fantasy VII Remake thing is PlayStation exclusive, but then Crisis Core, the Final Fantasy VII Reunion, which runs on the same engine, looks very similar to the remake game, so clearly they use a lot of the same assets and stuff. That's cross-platform on everywhere.
I don't know. I don't know what this is. I'll be honest with you. What is Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion?
Apparently, it's like a prequel. I mean, you're the Final Fantasy person.
But I don't know what Reunion is. Like I can tell you Reunion. What original Final Fantasy VII is. I know all about that, but what is Reunion? Like Reunion is like to me, I'm thinking like the Friends Reunion where they all come back together. Like, what the hell is this?
So
I know what a family reunion is. I know what a reunion of an old cast is. I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is.
So the original game was called Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII. It was released for PlayStation Portable in 2007.
Okay, Final Fantasy VII. This is specifically Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII.
Yes.
Crisis Core. I never played this. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so apparently it is a prequel to the 1997 Final Fantasy VII, and it's part of the meta series compilation of Final Fantasy VII, which includes other products related to the original game. I think the reunion part is a play on, so there's Final Fantasy VII Remake, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth,
yep.
Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion.
Okay, let me tell you what I think about this. I don't care. It's not Final Fantasy VII. I have no attachment to this whole prequel Crisis Core crap. I didn't play any PSP stuff. I'm out on this. Like, I won't play it. I don't care. It's not Final Fantasy VII. Okay. This is, clearly they were like, shit, Final Fantasy VII was badass and we made a lot of money on that. How can we monetize this? Oh, I know. We'll make a prequel.
That's what this is a remake.
I've heard of it before. It clearly wasn't that good or successful. Like,
this is a remake of the prequel.
Yeah, to be clear. No thanks. I'm out.
I'm wondering what the critical response was. The critical response was mixed, but it's got an 83 on Metacritic. So that's still really good.
Because everyone was like me, like, what the hell is Crisis Core? Yeah.
Apparently, it sold 350,000 copies in Japan on its release date.
Japan. Great.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know anything about this shit, you know? I wasn't in the PlayStation universe at that time.
And I was. But I wasn't in the PSP universe. I was in the actual PlayStation universe.
Fair enough. All right. It looks cool, though. Go check out a trailer for it. It looks cool. All right, number 8, Capcom has officially announced Dragon's Dogma 2. This came during its 10th anniversary stream. No game details were revealed during the stream beyond the logo. But in a follow-up statement, Capcom said that Dragon's Dogma 2 will, quote, begin the cycle anew, end quote. I don't know what that really means. They also confirmed that the sequel is being developed using its RE engine. That's where all the Resident Evil games, etc., are on. So that's exciting stuff for Dragon's Dogma fans. All right, that's all the new announcements, upcoming releases. Last week, I just want to mention, was the release of TMNT Shredder's Revenge. That's
on is badass. I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Go check it out. It's on Game Pass if you have it.
You can play up to 6 people on it, by the way. It's freaking awesome.
We need to do like a whole TriCast Gaming Crew.
Because you know what it is. I mean, it's like legitimately like the old school, like when I was... Yeah, it's an old school arcade, like, you know, side scroller arcade. Oh, it's freaking awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I'm all in. I want to make it happen. Let's figure out when to do it. All right. This week we saw the Fall Guys Xbox One and Switch release, as well as just the free to play across all platforms. Also this week was Sonic Origins on PC, PlayStation consoles, Xbox consoles, and Switch, as well as Capcom Fighting Collection on PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Switch, and Fire Emblem Warriors 3 Hopes on Switch. Next week, we'll have on June 30th, Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak on Switch and PC, as well as Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course on PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. Coming up the 1st of July, we've got F1 22 across all platforms except for Switch. On July 19th, we've got As Dusk Falls for PC and Xbox Series X, as well as Game Pass Day 1. And then also on July 19th, the Forza Horizon 5 Hot Wheels DLC on PC, Xbox Series X, and Xbox One. All right, free games. You can still grab PlayStation Plus's June games, Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl, God of War, Naruto Boruto Shinobi Striker. There are games with gold out there if you want shitty games. You can get them. the next free Epic Game Store titles have been revealed. Both are shitty. Fantasy RPG Gene Forge Mutagen and turn-based tactical roguelike RPG Erratus Lord of the Dread. I've literally never heard of these. June 30th to July 7th, they will replace a Game of Thrones the Board Game Digital Edition and Car Mechanic Simulator 2018, which are still free until June 30th. Finally, Amazon has confirmed that the following 6 titles will be available for free on July 12th and 13th as part of the Prime Day: Mass Effect Legendary Edition, Grid Legends, Need for Speed Heat, Star Wars Jedi Academy, Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, and Star Wars Republic Commando will be available. Finally, some Game Pass news for you. June 21st, out as you're listening to this, Shadowrun Trilogy and Total War 3 Kingdoms. Also out as you're listening to this as of June 23rd, FIFA 22.
Already downloaded.
Blade Point. Yeah, now you got no more excuses. Get out there and get your FIFA on. It's there for you. And then on July 1st, Far Cry 5 will be coming to the service. Far Cry 5 is one of the best Far Cry games there is. Possibly the best. It's got a really, really cool story. Go check that one out, too. All right. I think that's about it for the show. Back to the normal time runs now that we're out of the big shows, with the Summer Game Showcase and our 100th episode, etc.
We could have made it shorter if you didn't talk so much at the beginning.
We did a nice little pregnant pause there as I
was getting the glare look. Yeah. Like, you son of a bitch, you are the one who made that go so much further.
It's okay. It was fun. I thought we had some good conversation. And yeah, on a lighter news week, it's fun to talk about some different things. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
The hole.
Wait, our little Star Wars hole?
Yeah, we went down to a little Star Wars wormhole. Yeah, for sure.
A wormhole. Nice play on, you know.
Dune.
Yes. Yep. I hope you get eaten by a maker. Just comes up, and that is the one thing though that, like, the whole imagery of the fuck it, what's the thing in episode 6 that Boba Fett falls into?
Oh god, if you had not said anything, I would be able to freaking tell you. Sarlacc.
So the whole imagery of the Sarlacc pit does remind me a lot of what the worms supposed to look like as they come out of the sand.
Which, look, my last little squirrel at the chase, I saw a thing talking about how the Sarlacc, in, you know, again, in the little, like, loopholes or whatever the story, how you go back to the originals and the Sarlacc was holding onto, you know, it reached out its tongue and grabbed onto Lando and was trying to pull him in. And he was, like, grabbing onto this, you know, sand and, like, asking for people to help him. Right. And, but then later on it shows the Sarlacc, like, grabbing the entire Boba Fett ship, you know, and, like, holding it down. It was, like, confirming that Lando is the single strongest being in the galaxy.
I saw that one too and I laughed. I'm like, yep, there are lots of little funny things like that across the universe. Yep, for sure. All right, well, thank you everyone for listening to our squirrels on this 101st episode of the Tricast Gaming Podcast. We hope you had as much fun as we did. Remember, like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. If you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. The show will be back again next Friday with episode number 102. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and game hard.